Eastman Financial Report. This is Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Thursday, October 26th, 2023. We are nearing the end, of course, to October, which is the first of the first month in the last quarter of the year. Results of fiscal and monetary policy for the year 2023 as we prepare to enter the exciting year 2024 when we have not only really appreciate you watching us here on WVW-TV. As you know, we are a network that thrives on our sponsors, and many people help to keep this and current, and we've been doing this since 2006, so we really appreciate the long-term support that generous viewers such as yourself have given, as well as our sponsors. As you know, the sponsor for my program is Swiss America Trading, and very well known and respected in the precious metals space, and they offer, they make a market in tangible precious metals. So if you're interested in that space for your personal portfolio, or thinking about converting some of your Federal Reserve notes into either bullion coins or bullion, or even numismatic collector coins, certainly give Swiss America a call. They're at 800-519-519. And you can look around and shop around and see what they have to offer. If you do that, use the promo code EASTMAN, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, and they'll be happy to send you some free information about the so give them a call, 1-800-519-6271. Ask them for the free right now. It's a great deal. There are silver bullion coins, they're called half dollars, standing liberty half dollar coins that are minted as bullion coins. They're still silver, minted by the U.S. government. And Swiss America is selling or if you're looking for a special gift idea for friends and family, certainly consider buying some of those silver coins, because they are really well priced directly to your home or business. So it's a great way to give someone a gift that won't end up in a landfill, because very few people will throw a silver coin in the landfill. So take advantage of not only the inflationary economy we're living in, but also an opportunity to diversify into tangibles, which have a tendency to go up in price and value as markets. They're standing. We'll be happy to talk to you. Tell them Dan Eastman sent you. And again, that's $13.50 per coin, a maximum of 250 coins. You can't go crazy here. That over. So give them a call, 1-800-519-6271. Okay, let's jump into the news today. And we were talking quite a bit yesterday about the talk about today is that credit card rates on average in the United States have now reached 29% annual interest rate. And that's something to think about. I want to talk about that with respect to the nature of credit cards and how they have gone from being sort of an exclusive tool, and they weren't even revolving Ford's famous song, I sold my soul to the company store. Well, basically, you'd buy your provisions if you worked in one of these company-dominated communities, and the store that was always very localized. And throughout American history, especially in the pioneer days when the expansion of the Midwest and the West, town after town after town was popping up out of the prairies and the forests and the hills. And of course, they all hopefully were connected. Bank, and there was a general merchant store and a few other sundries and this and that. And it was not uncommon throughout American history that if somebody was hungry or in need of clothing or a tool or something, that often you'd get the local. Two weeks from now. That was an American credit, and it was very limited, and it was sort of an embarrassment. I mean, if you had to go into the store and put something on the tab, oof, then, you know, the other people in town, they had a real sense that you weren't solvent or you weren't doing very well, and then that was a stigma, and you didn't really want to do that. And of course, position where the tab got too big and you really couldn't pay it off at all. And quite often in the early days of America, somebody'd hitch up the wagon and disappear into the night, and that'd be the end of it. It wasn't good. Well, that's why it was very difficult for Americans to get personal credit. Concern that, you know, most Americans lived on farms or were working in, you know, manufacturing or working in town. And the idea of borrowing was sort of an idea that was primarily what the rich people did because they had collateral, they had assets. Value it, and they would lend about half of the value because the bank knew that if you defaulted, they'd have to go through the hassle of selling your tractor or your whatever, your boat or whatever you put up. And there's transition costs or transactional costs involved. So it was really kind of a clumsy situation. Well, as mass merchant retailing began to emerge after World War II, there would be, instead of local general merchants scattered throughout America, all buying from hither and yon or whatever sourcing they could find, the idea emerged of stores, and you'd be able to manage your operating costs effectively and run very large retail operations. And we don't think about that. Not free advertising, but the point is there are big box stores, Walmart, let's not forget the king of kings here, or the king of retail, that's just not, that's critical. You know, logo on it from sea to shining sea. They buy their inventory. Remember yesterday I was talking about, they sent all those American dollars to China, we got all this stuff back, it was into these big box stores. Credit came into vogue, and it was not ancient history, although it feels like it, but I remember very clearly in the late 60s and early 70s, a month you had to pay that. Balance over and pay interest on it. Okay, that wasn't the case. It's like an American Express card. You charge stuff and then you're expected to pay the bill off at the end of the month. Well, by effectively adding additional income to the American pocketbook, Americans will spend it. The idea is that saving isn't when you're in a consuming. And ultimately, the revolving charge card became a thing. And it was something where you could buy things and you didn't have to pay it off at the end of the month. So you're store was playing in the background of people's minds, thinking, you know, you give people a credit card and they will spend up to the limit and they will think about. Loan or something, pledge the house or whatever they could pledge. So at the end of the day, when consumer revolving credit came to be, the interest rates were much higher, percent, or, you know, it was almost a percent a month, which was an eye-popping amount. I thought, boy, that's, you know, what you don't want to do is charge a bunch of stuff and then when the bill, and then this is what has happened in America since the 1970s. We've gone from zero to $2 trillion in revolving debt outstanding by consumers. And of course, when you think about the risk of default, when you look at, you know, who actually defaults on a credit card, it's like about 6 to 8% of the people. But when you're looking at this average rate today of 29% return on that $2 trillion out there, you can see why the big banks and credit card companies are really, really interested in getting as many credit cards into your hands as possible. You use it. And B, they know that you're going to probably carry a balance. And C, they know 29% return is good money. So earnings of America. And it's kind of a, if you take it, think about the concepts of the time value of money. A dollar is worth a dollar today, but if I get it a year from now, it's going to be worth 96 cents. And so the point is, the most valuable dollar you can get is the dollar today. And when you factor in the risk of default at, say, 8%, 6 to 8%, and inflation at 4%, then you're probably up around 12%, you know, and that's why oftentimes what you're seeing today in the commerce is, it seems like every last person under the sun, retailer, is offering their own version of a MasterCard or Visa. There's some credit, obviously, in American Express and Discover. But at the end of the day, there's everybody under the sun that will want you to have their particular MasterCard if you. For national merchants and national organizations to get their regular customer base to sign up for a credit card. Because when you're talking about 29% return on money, and then if you factor out the, you know, the cost of money and the inflation, percent, you know, that's really good money. I mean, and all you have to do is get your customers to buy more than they can pay for, and you really don't care if they're strung out and they balance they become. The fact that those families and individuals are captured and their future earning dollars from their future paychecks are already committed to paying back what have this idea that if you rack up all this debt and you have a permanent life insurance in place, when you finally drop over, the life insurance pays off the debt or income. I think, well, that's an interesting strategy. I mean, just, wow, I wouldn't recommend that at all, but that's apparently, you know, how some people view this process. One of the interesting things, I was talking to a psychologist friend of mine, a very learned person, guy's really, really smart, and he brought up credit cards as being detached from money. And what I'm going to do here, if you can see this, of course, is this is my famous Eastman dollar. It's actually the Federal Reserve. I have title to this dollar at the moment until I spend it on something. But the point is, when you are in a situation where you have to open your wallet or purse and you pull out this this symbolic piece of paper. I mean, this is a piece of paper. There's some ink on it, different colors of ink. They got a little, you know, some green and some black ink, and, you know, it's multicolored, but it's a piece of paper. Okay, this used to be a tree, and now it's a piece of paper. But psychologically, the value of this piece of paper is important because we're American citizens, and this is our currency of the realm. This is, you know, it says right here on the front, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. By law, if you owe somebody money in America and you're an American citizen, even if you're not, you hand them this, here's that dollar I owe you. And what it means is you have fulfilled your part of the bargain. If you go back to contract law, you have a meeting of the minds and you have, you know, intent to be bound and all, this will do it. So if I put this on your day, hey, I owe you that dollar, here's your dollar, and I walk away, you can't sue me and say, hey, I don't want this piece of paper. You have to give me, you know, 10 dimes instead. That doesn't work. This is money, okay? So when we pull money out of our wallet or purse to make a purchase, you're psychologically tuned to the value of this being money. Now, if this was a $100 bill and all of its fancy, colorful glory with metal strips and all sorts of, you know, identification marks, it becomes more powerful. So if you pull out a stack of $100 bills, you know, suddenly all of us are preconditioned to say, hey, this is money. Like if you were walking down the street and this is blowing along in the wind, you know, would you stop to pick up a dollar? Yeah, I would. Now, maybe if I see a penny laying on the ground, in my age, you always think about, I remember my grandfather telling me, he said, if you don't save your pennies, you'll never be rich. Well, that's when a penny used to buy stuff. But the point is, there's a psychological plus to paper money. And it's the same thing with the euro in Europe and, you know, the Japanese yen. I mean, you know, if you're in Japan and a yen's blowing down the street, you're probably going to go pick it up. So the point is, when we make our purchases, we think very much about this because we know how hard these are to get. I mean, we have to go and work for 2 weeks, then you get this paycheck and half of it goes in taxes and, you know, withholdings. And then the other half goes digitally into your checking account. So then you go to the bank and say, I'd like a dollar bill, please. And, you know, we see this as the symbol of money, of currency in the United States. Well, the trick is before the revolving credit happened in the 70s, this is how people went through life. You'd open your wallet or your purse and you'd pull out money and quite frankly, coins, you know, back in the day, they were silver, had worth. You dropped a quarter on the street, it was a silver quarter. You know, a gallon of milk, a loaf of bread, whatever, it was a valuable token because it was, again, it stored the value of your labor because, you know, you did 2 weeks worth of work and you get some money. And it was one of those things where if you open your wallet, and these are relatively scarce, I don't know about you, but for most of us in America, when I open my wallet, there are a precious few. There are not an infinite supply. Well, should I buy the fancy shoes or should I buy the ones that are on sale? Should I buy the off-brand loaf of bread or should I get, you know, the famous brand loaf of bread? You were making decisions, and the ultimate break on your thing, because when you're out of these, and you're going to go hungry until the next 2 week cycle, and then the thing starts over. That's why it was very, very concerning to have to owe people at the company supplies for the upcoming 2 weeks to live on. You got to pay it for the last 2 weeks, and then what am I going to eat in the next 2 weeks? And you get into that doom loop, basically. Well, psychology to it. Effectively, what happened, and I can pull out a credit card. I don't want anybody seeing my number here, but basically, well, I won't do that because I don't want to this. I have this little plastic card, and I give it to the merchant, and I get my stuff and a receipt, and I leave. And you know what? I look at my wallet, and these are all still in there, and they're all happy, you know, and they stay in there longer. So the psychologically, what they decision from using what is the currency of the realm, and we all respect the American dollar as having value. You know, you can criticize it all you want, but I guarantee you, if somebody handed you one, you'd keep it. But what they've done is separated. My psychologist friend was explaining to me that this is very prominent in the casino business. It's critically important, actually, to the nature of casinos around the world, that what life's big enough, gamble, and so I don't frequent casinos, but from what I've heard, and I've been in a few and I've seen it, basically you give them these and they give you colored chips, and there's, you know, like the $5 chip and a $10 chip and a $20 chip, and if you're a big high roller, I guess there's a $100 chip, I don't know. But the point is, when you're on the gambling floor and you're, you know, which is recreation, it's an entertainment, and you're enjoying yourself in an evening of gambling with bucks and retire happily ever after, which doesn't happen because the house always wins. Okay, in the long run, the house wins. It's kind of like in the long run, Adam Smith is right, and in the long run, the house wins. The point is, they have separated from the money, your psychological bearing on the money, and they've given you plastic chips that don't mean anything. So it's one thing to throw a $100 bill on the craps table, and it's another thing to put a chip on the craps table. Because if you were sitting there gambling, very, very quickly in your mind, the light bulb would go on and say, whoa, wait a minute, I'm throwing $100 bills down on this table and I'm losing them. That's just cost me $300, you know. But if you're throwing chips down, you know, it's just a plastic piece. The idea of segregating the perception of money from the perception of entertainment is critical to how casinos work. That's how money goes flowing in. And you can basically, that's why there, you know, there aren't any clocks in casinos. And, you know, it's the same thing with the credit card industry. When they could separate you from this, to use, I don't have a symbolic credit card here, but, you know, we'll use this invisible credit card. And if all I do is go in and buy stuff, it becomes very easy to separate the buying decision from how much money you have. And then, of course, in the early days of charge cards, this would come back to bite you at the end of the month. There weren't enough of these to pay off. You're going to eat next month when you spend all the money last month, you know? Well, that's why this revolving credit thing came into play. You don't have to have that discussion at the end of the month. Oh, the bill's here. Oh, huh, boy, it's more than we have. Over, and we'll pay it next month. No, you won't. You'll be spending money, and you'll be growing and growing and growing and growing the balance. And that's why we're staring into the abyss with $2 trillion. It sounds like the federal government, only, you know, consumers, but they're only at two, okay? The federal government is $33 trillion and counting. So that's the psychological impact. And of course, it begs the perspective, you know, the average American. You know, I speak to we the people here. I'm not a billionaire and I don't play one on TV either. I'm frankly just telling you what, it, you know, from a perspective of maybe my conservative Midwestern values, which we all like to flaunt here, including Warren Buffett, mind you. The idea is, how do you position yourself within this world where consumer credit is going, and, you know, the government credit is off the charts? And how do you position yourself within this type of an economy? And of course, prudence would dictate that you would keep your revolving credit debt low. Now, of course, the beauty of revolving credit is that if there's a emergency, a healthcare thing, somebody's in an accident or gets sick, or for some reason, you know, you are in dire straits, you do have the ability to make a transaction or a purchase, and you can deal with the consequences later. And of course, that should be one of these thought processes. And then I'm going to have to pay it back, which means I've got to cut back on my spending in the next couple of months to pay off the balance so that I get back to carrying a balance at 29%. Now, I know there are some poor folk that are basically stuck in a really bad place, and but for the credit card, they may have, you know, perished. need of emergency funding, the idea of carrying balances at 29% is obviously not good. I mean, it doesn't take an economist or a rocket scientist to figure out paying 29% on last month's restaurant meal is not good economics. Positioning ourselves into what's going to be a very turbulent situation. And it's not just, you know, in the U.S., because one of the stories today, and I'm sort of harping on this a little longer, but the Argentina situation that I talked about is that Argentina, due to this deficit spending, this mindless deficit spending where they just borrow and borrow and borrow and borrow and sell bonds and sell bonds. And of course, there are bond houses. You know, the Argentines as much debt as they can possibly sell, but it has driven their interest rate, their central bank rate, to like 133%. And of course, we're sitting here in the United States watching our Federal Reserve tweaking around at 33%. Well, the inflation impact on the economy is notable in Argentina. Now, some people will argue, well, that's a good. America had 133% inflation, then your credit card debt would become meaningless. It would be so small that you could basically pay that off in one paycheck. Well, here's the caveat to that. And I think that's important to understand that there are different types of debt that you can get. You have a 30-year fixed rate mortgage at 2% because you bought a house 3 years ago. You're really in a good place, okay? Because contractually, if it's a fixed rate mortgage, and you know, ceteris paribus, as economists like to say, all things remain equal, the 30-year contract rate at 2% will be an extraordinary bargain when inflation is 5%, 10%, whatever it is, and you will be in a happy place. The value of your home will be going up, and you're going to be paying the loan back with inflated dollars at a very low interest rate. You win. Okay. Same thing with a car. You got a 6-year car loan, 5-year car loan, and you know, last year they're like under 2%. Well, now they're not. They're approaching, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8% for a car loan. But if it was a 2% loan, and you know, cars don't go up in value, it's a depreciating asset because cars wear out. We love our cars, but they do wear out. You're in a good place because you're getting inflated dollars with your paycheck. And I noticed today that the UAW and Ford tentatively settled their 6-week strike. So, you know, we can expect to see wages going up, and that's predictable in the economy. So now the Ford workers are going to have a bigger paycheck, and if they have a fixed rate mortgage and a fixed auto loan, then those dollars stay constant, but their paycheck is bigger, so they're better off. Inflation has helped them. Big problem when you have a variable rate, and of course, all credit cards are variable rate, and they're at 29% right now. If inflation got crazy like Argentina, then you could see credit cards with 100%, you know, annual interest rate, because it's in the contract that they have the right to raise the interest rate, and you have the right to pay it off. But how do you pay it off? And if the interest rates continue to go up with this revolving balance, and anybody with a balance knows that most of your minimum monthly payment is interest, it's got nothing to do with very reduction in the principal, you can find yourself in a debt spiral, just like Argentina and other countries, Zimbabwe, where you can't get out, and you're paying, you know, $2,000 a month on your credit card bill, you can't get out. And that's a real problem. And that's why the credit card companies know that they really have the ability to protect themselves from inflation and default risk. It's all built right in. Now, back in the day, states used to have these anti-usury laws. Lobbying over time has eroded that, and now there aren't laws in the states that stop credit card companies from charging the moon. So it's a big risk, and I think we have to factor that in. Well, I'm out of time for today, so thank you so much for listening. It's always a pleasure to be able to share my thoughts with you, and we appreciate you viewing us on WVW-TV and the Eastman Financial Report. So have a great day, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.